everybody. Welcome back to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously. And doesn't take recording time very seriously, I think, either.
You know what? I think
I've been sitting here for a fucking hour.
It was an honest mountain time zone, Eastern time zone confusion. You know how it is, right?
Yeah, you travel a lot of those time zones today?
I do. I was in a handful of them, at least one.
Which ones? So,
the, you know, mine. I was in mine.
The whole time. I texted. It got bad enough that I texted your wife and said, "Is this is kind of a joke, but also serious. Is Patrick alive?"
Right.
Because if the answer is no, that's bad.
Right. Yeah. And also, if the answer is no, that means you can probably stop recording the episode.
Well, that was the good part of it. Yeah.
It's a little silver lining there.
Well, and it wasn't just me. We also have, right now, we have two of our unpaid interns listening in because we are doing this new Ghost Plus show called Post Ghost, where every once in a while, some of our colleagues here at Is This a Ghost will sit in and listen to the episode. And then after the episode, we'll do a short additional episode with them where they get to ask questions about how many times we just went off the rails and did a bad job with this episode. And they were also here with me. So it was three of us sitting here just very patiently for a long time. And we're glad you're okay.
Nothing was stopping you from just recording the episode and then just texting me updates throughout. You know, that would have been fine too.
I thought about it. They didn't know this. I was kind of prompting them with the opportunity to make funny jokes.
Right. How'd it go? That's fine.
I waited for you.
Sam, Jen, I really appreciate you not coming in and stealing my only job.
They could have. I want to be very clear. They are very funny and they could have knocked it out of the park, but they, out of respect for you, they did not. Are you okay? Everything's good. You were at softball practice. Is that right?
I was at softball practice. Before that, I was dropping people off at church and then cleaning and then dropping people off elsewhere.
This is Tuesday.
I don't know. I don't even know. I have not stopped moving since like 4:45 this morning. So
did you get up and you got on your little bike?
I got on my little bike. I got on my little extra size bike.
And the handlebars go like this?
They do, actually. Yeah. It gives me a teeny tiny knuckle workout. just this much. Yeah. I get my heart rate up pretty high. It got into the 70s today.
Wow. Are you okay?
I actually threw up. But no, it's I'm feeling fit. I'm feeling really good now. Feeling great.
Yeah, you look good.
Thanks. I don't.
Your eyes are extra hollow, you're losing a lot of weight under your eyeballs. Looks good.
They say you can't focus on where you want to lose the weight, but I find that you can.
Oh, man. Well, that's good. Anything else going on?
No, nothing. Nothing more interesting than riding a teeny tiny bike at 4 o'clock in the morning. No.
I think we could probably sell a lot of Ghost Plus subscriptions if you would just record that every morning and put that up on our special video channel. Has that occurred to you?
It has not. No, not a whole lot of cohesive thoughts go through my brain at 4:45 in the morning.
That's fair.
On a tiny bike. How about awesome. You? What's going on with you? Anything interesting?
You said that as if there should be something. Am I missing
right,
something?
Right, yeah. Like, is anything, wink, wink, interesting going on in your life?
Erin's not pregnant, is she?
I don't.
Please say no.
I don't think so.
What else? Probably. What else?
I don't even know.
I mean, the Department of Education might close soon.
Mm-hmm.
And that might do that might have be really interesting for my job.
And every airport in the US has turned into one of those like puzzles where you can only move one plane at a time.
Oh, I wanted to ask you about this. You're an engineer. So how is it possible that planes are made so that pilots cannot see any other plane?
You've seen a plane, right?
Yes.
Right. And
so
you know,
you see right, and primarily this you're right. Like, it's like Cyclops, looking at a Cyclops.
Exactly.
Visor.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You can't look to the left and the right very well, and you can't look down, importantly.
Well, you and this only is my look question.
Up and forward. Right.
Should we fix that?
I don't know.
Why was that made that way?
That's a good question. I mean, you could be like a fly around like one of those like B-2 Stratofortress, you know, planes with like the glass uh-huh. on the front for the gunner to sit uh-huh. in. That's actually not a bad idea. I do like that a lot.
I think, yeah, if we could have just one person sitting on top of the plane in a bubble, just like head on a swivel.
Yeah.
I would feel way better.
just keeping an eye for other planes. Just in case. You know what? I think at the end of the day, I think we are actually creating new jobs in this country, and there are jobs like
I think so,
like airplane spotter.
I think that actually hiring people to do that for every flight seems expensive, but the efficiency is in the savings you get from not scrapping planes and then making new planes because you've exploded multiple planes.
Right.
You know?
Right. Pays for itself almost immediately.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
All right. So we've solved that. Yeah.
Anything else?
No, no. But again, I would say anybody that's going to fly on a U.S. commercial aircraft in the next, gosh, I don't know.
4 years?
I would say 4 years, but it's not the sort of thing you're just going to like fix 4 years and one day from now. So I don't know.
Ever?
It'll work out.
It's the decade of the road trip.
Exactly.
Road trips are back, baby. And please go on them.
I'm gonna predict right now. At some point, somebody in the federal government is gonna say, you know, something along the lines of, "Do you know how many planes crashed in the 1950s?" That's what they're gonna say. We're gonna be like, "Oh, okay, yeah. I guess a whole bunch.
I guess we're doing okay.
Yeah, that's not too bad." They're like, "Seriously, a plane crashed every Tuesday in the 1950s. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Do you know how many Nazis there were in 1941? Yeah. Because we're way below that threshold right now. So I think it's okay." Fuck.
And all those Nazis had airplanes too. So.
And that's why we have Snoopy. All right. One last thing before we get into the story. Nope, that's not, the volume's not on. Ivy was back in here playing with this. Hold on. Let's try that again. Got to give an update to our decoin to Ghostcoin. So after a whole bunch of research, what we've decided this week is decoin's not going to work for us. We pulled for it. It sounded really, really cool. And the competition is, as I think we talked about last time, surprisingly asexual, which is disappointing. So we're going to Ghostcoin. It's Ghostcoin again. We're back to Ghostcoin, the OG. Now, this time we've made the coins actual ghosts.
Right.
So they're hard to get your hands on.
Mm. And importantly, if you previously owned Ghostcoin, those are null and void. I'm very sorry. They don't transfer. You would think they would. You would think they would.
They don't.
But they don't. I'm sorry.
They have not transferred to the other side, which is the important part.
Exactly.
If you want more Ghostcoin, actually, to take your current coins, you must destroy them completely.
Right. Your coins are stuck in limbo. I don't know if you know that. Yeah. It's a financial term. It's regulated by the SEC. It's called limbo.
And they will not be coming back to this side of things in the way that you need them to. So that's the bad news. Good news is you can buy new coins.
Mm-hmm. Nothing stopping you.
And destroy them all.
Right.
I would say 5% of them might come back as ghost coins. So you're going to want to destroy a lot of coins. Mm-hmm. You got to destroy them all the way dead. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do that. I bought into the pure ghost coin when that was available. And we should have probably made a big announcement about that very small window. It was like a one-hour window.
Yeah, you should have told somebody besides me, probably.
Yeah. But now, no. And now we're here. Now we have a glut of coins, of ghost coins. If other people find a way to make coins into ghosts to get ghost coin, that bodes well for our investment.
I think so.
Otherwise, we're just going to be sitting on these coins with flatlining a little bit. But that's where it is right now. And I wanted to share that. Any questions about ghost coin?
Nothing but. But I think we can move on.
Okay, great. Well, then, do you want to hear a ghost story?
Love to.
All right, and special thank you, actually, to unpaid intern Sam Murdoch for suggesting this story.
Nice.
Thank you, Sam. It's a banger. And let's get into it. So Charles Melville Hayes was born on May 16th, 1856, in Rock Island, Illinois.
Oh, okay.
Quad Cities.
Yes. One of the four, I guess.
You've heard of them. I want to say we do have a really great listener whose name I did not look up before this, but who lives in the Quad Cities, who has sent me some ghost stories. Now, this is not one of those, but just so you know, listener, whose name I do not recall off the top of my head, we're going to get to
that. Just shout real loud. We'll hear you. Just shout it real loud. Yeah. We're close enough.
Yeah. Actually, and maybe Jeremy can kind of cut in. Like, I'll say some names, and Jeremy, we'll figure out which one it is, and you cut it in.
Okay.
Everyone just say female names that they come up with. Julie.
Becky.
Sarah.
Cornelius.
No.
Oh, sorry.
That's it. So one of those is her. So anyway, thank you to you also. But this one is, thank you, Sam. So Charles Melville Hayes, Rock Island, Illinois. Now, a few years later, he wisens up a little bit. He moves down to St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah.
He does the thing that we all do, which is spend time in St. Louis. And here's our boy.
Oh, he's got
a Midwestern face.
He does. It's like a CIA agent face. Like as soon as this picture goes away from my screen, I'm not going to remember this face at all.
Correct. Yes.
Nothing memorable.
If you took a CIA agent and you fed him lots of corn for a long time, that's our boy. That's him. So Charles, in 1873, then he begins working for the Atlantic and Pacific Railroad.
Hmm. Okay. So both oceans railroad. I assume it goes to
quite transcontinental.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's going to come back. That's going to be important for later. So put a pin in that. So he starts work for the railroad as a young man. He's like, oh, wow. Trains are for me. I never want to do anything but railroads ever again.
He's one of those boys. That's fine.
He's one of those boys. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the most Midwestern person. From 1877 to 1884, he serves as a secretary to the general manager of the Missouri Pacific Railroad.
Okay. Secretary to the general manager.
Mm-hmm. Pretty not the good. Assistant the general manager, not the secretary general manager, secretary too. The Missouri Pacific Railroad, by the way, still runs right next to my parents' house.
Really?
Yeah, they live in Pacific now. Hmm. Pacific is a town in Missouri named after the railroad.
Not the ocean.
Not the, well, in a very roundabout way, sort of.
It's like a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing. It's
except this one has a lot more STDs. Not for my parents, I don't think, though. So that's important. Note, Randy and Denise, don't call me. Then in 1881, Charles marries a woman named Clara Gregg. They get married in St. Louis, and they go on to have four daughters whose names are either Orion or Orion. O-R-I-A-N. Let's say Orion.
Orion, yeah.
Orion, yep. Clara, Marjorie, and Louise.
Okay. Orion's got to be a family name. You don't choose those other three.
It's not
a misspelled constellation as the fourth name. I don't.
No, and she was the first one. Maybe here's a theory. Maybe they were like, we need to name our daughters something like really special and magical and wonderful. Let's do like something celestial, but not so on the nose.
Right.
And they like did it, and they're like, we fucked up real bad. Let's just name the next one Clara. this is bad. So in 1884, then, Charles makes what I would consider a pretty lateral career move. He's hired on in the same exact position, but at a new railroad, a different railroad, the Wabash, St. Louis, and Pacific Railway.
Mm. Okay.
Not to be confused with Missouri Pacific Railroad. This is the Wabash, St. Louis, and Pacific Railway.
Okay. Right.
I don't know. And he, I guess, did great because 2 years later they make him general manager.
Okay, so he knew that.
So.
Yeah, he knew it was going to be a diagonal move eventually.
Yeah,
he had to wait for one guy to die.
Yeah. He's got to go. He's got to chest this, and he's got to go whichever piece goes this way and that way. That's him. He's a bishop, I guess.
You've probably had job interviews like that before, right? Where they're like, "Oh, hey, I know this position seems a little beneath you, but the guy right above you is about to die." You've heard that, right?
Sometimes I feel like I'm in that position right now.
If you see a bunch of, like, you know, 28-year-olds being hired in as your assistant, be like, hang on.
You better go to the doctor.
My coffee's getting worse, actually.
Actually, the Chicago, so I worked in arts management for a long time. I did marketing for lots of arts organizations in Chicago. And one of the things you learn very quickly when you do that sort of work in a city like Chicago is that's exactly what happens. There is no one gets promoted. They all just jump to other organizations where they get better jobs.
Right.
So they keep going up and up until you get to the very top, and then you throw yourself off a building. And that's how those positions open up, and then you go up, which I assume the railroad is very similar. Mm-hmm. 3 years after he became general manager, he becomes then vice president of the Wabash Railroad.
Okay.
D- Different railroad, better title.
Mm-hmm.
He's chugging up the corporate track.
Mm-hmm.
So he's VP of Wabash until 1896, at which point he then becomes general manager of a Canadian company.
Oh.
He's okay. Going up north.
Right.
And the railroad company that he is now general manager of is called the Grand Trunk Railway.
All right. I'm liking this. I'm liking it.
I always knew Grand Funk Railroad must come from somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
No, I would not have expected it to come up on this podcast. Yeah. The Grand Trunk Railway, where, you know, the cabooses are A+.
Indeed.
Now, at this point, GTR is not doing great. It's near bankruptcy. It's it's losing its ass, I guess you could say. and it's losing a lot of market share to its number one competitor, which is Canadian Pacific Railway.
Oh, so many Pacific railways.
Oh, my God. The Pacific was like, everyone's like, let's go to the Pacific.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I will say the Pacific is where a lot of ships come from other countries.
Yeah, they keep most of the ships and train, in the ocean then nowadays. Trains
like take stuff.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. So yeah. That's helpful. So this is when, the Grand Trunk Railroad is doing badly. This is when J.P. Morgan gets involved.
Oh, okay.
J. Pierpont himself. Actually, this is kind of a fun fact.
Wham!
J.P. Morgan actually also features pretty heavily in a new episode of Smith's Show that's coming out pretty soon on Ghost Plus. So if you're interested in learning more about J.P. Morgan and his shenanigans, you could do worse than subscribing to Ghost Plus because it's coming soon. The bigger story in that episode is about a man who walked around the world with a helmet on his head and pushing an empty baby stroller. Anyway, so J.P. Morgan gets involved. He tells the Grand Trunk Railroad board, he's like, look, I'm J.P. Morgan. I don't know if you've heard of me. Kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I know why you're failing. It's because you are Canadian.
Okay.
What you need is an American to go up there.
You need to become the 51st state. That's what I'm hearing.
You need to become the 51st state. We're going to see some parallels between.
Okay. Yeah.
Between then and now. Yeah.
We're getting there. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a little taste, a little sous-son of how this is going to go. JP's advice was to bring more aggressive American business practices to the company.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maybe some tariffs.
Absolutely.
If I had to go top of my head. I don't know.
Have you tried firing everyone? Yeah, it really seems to work down where I'm from.
And then you could try hiring them back, but not having their email addresses. So right. You can't actually hire them back.
Exactly. Then every 2 weeks you pretend you're going to pay them, but then it gets lost in the mail because you have the email address. And eventually about 6 weeks later, you go bankrupt a second time, but you're long gone by then.
And things are so efficient. Have you tried emailing everyone who works at your railroad and saying, tell me 5 things you've done this year or else you'll be fired in a move that, that everyone will agree is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do that? So on this advice from J.P. Morgan, the board hires our boy, Charles Melville Hayes. They say, good idea. We do need some American attitude around here. Let's bring up an American who knows how shit works.
Mm-hmm.
They hire him up. And he turns him around, as you would expect from good old American ingenuity. Charles reorganizes the entire management structure of the company. And he negotiates the running rights with competitors. So like agreements to run on their tracks and things.
Sure, right? Sure.
Which is good business. You work with your competitors. Mm-hmm. Pretty good, actually.
Right. Yeah. You sabotage their tracks. I know how this works. Yeah.
Yeah. But not the ones that you're on.
Right. Yeah. As soon as you're done. As soon as you're
over. Very important.
It, yeah. The very last part sets everything on fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
This makes sense.
The front of your, when you're going forward, you set the charges.
Right.
Once you're past them, then you blow the charges. That order of operations, very important.
Very important.
He builds a new track also, some new tracks, I should say, also. He orders bigger, better, and more powerful locomotives. He's doing the American way, and it's going great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the midst of all this, one of Charles's big ambitions was he wanted to build and control a transcontinental railroad.
Oh, yeah.
He's seen one before. And he thought, this is the whole fucking country. I want this. I want to do this. They won't let me do it in America, but you know where I could do it? 51st State America.
Mm-hmm. They're too nice to say no.
He wants to run 3,600 miles of track from Moncton in New Brunswick to Prince Rupert in British Columbia.
Yep, those are both cities. Yep.
I will tell you, so it's so funny. Aaron's company is headquartered in Moncton. Uh-huh. And we've had occasion to kind of just do some research on where her paychecks come from.
Right.
For no reason, really. Yeah. Do we want to live close to where the paychecks come from?
See what real estate prices are like. What do apartments look like up there? How's the school
Pretty
district?
Cheap, actually. Are there any colleges where, I don't know, someone who teaches could work?
Mm-hmm. There are.
But it's a small town. But in Moncton is where he wanted to start this track. And then it goes all the way to Prince Rupert in British Columbia. So it's basically transcontinental and-ish. So in 1900, Charles introduces a proposal to the Grand Trunk Railroad Board to extend the lines of the Grand Trunk Western, which is an American subsidiary of the GTR. Mm-hmm. He wants to extend it from Chicago, which you're familiar with. You've heard of Chicago.
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah.
To Winnipeg.
Winnipeg. Okay.
To Winnipeg, which is in, I think, Canada.
It sounds very Canadian.
Yeah. Sam will tell us later. He's from there. So he wants to go from Chicago to Winnipeg, quote, and thence to the Pacific.
I have not looked at a map, but I assume it is further west.
So he submits his plan. The board of directors for GTR. Mm-hmm. All of whom, by the way, are British.
Okay.
And therefore have no vision or foresight.
Right.
And really, I would say probably no positive qualities of any kind.
They're from like a teeny tiny island the size of like Illinois.
Do they know? Oh, yeah. We have a transcontinental railroad in Great Britain. It's 9 miles long. Fuck those guys.
I can throw a stone from one side to the other. It's called the transcontinental stone throw.
These idiots obviously are dumb, and they say no. We're not going to do that for you, Charles. So Charles says, well, fuck you guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're so far away. You're so far away, board. Because the entire board of directors here is in London.
Oh, not only are they British, but they're like...
They're British in Britain.
Oh.
Yeah. So they mean nothing. Yeah. So Charles says, no, I don't think so. So he quits, actually. Mm-hmm. And he goes to work for the Southern Pacific Railroad.
Oh, man.
Which I think is back in the U.S.
Sounds like it.
But yeah, sure. But a few months into that job, the Southern Pacific Railroad is sold to a new group of owners. And Charles thinks these people are absolute morons. So he goes back to GTR and he says... You know what? Actually, I've thought about it a lot, and I think I'll give you a second chance.
To approve my transcontinental railroad from Winnipeg to whatever.
Vents to the Pacific. Yeah. Well, and it just so happens that the president of GTR, this is a man named Sir Charles Rivers Wilson, he has actually convinced the board in the time that Charles is away, he's convinced the board to approve this transcontinental plan.
Oh.
So now the board is on board. Mm-hmm. Choo-choo. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but the Canadian government, the prime minister, he's like, you know what? We're in too.
Yeah.
Let's do this. So
how many moose do you need us to get out of the way? That's all. I just need a number.
Because we would like to clear many. Yeah. We're so fucking sick of them. Please. Remind me when we're doing post-ghost. I want to ask Sam how big a moose is. Mm-hmm. I feel like I get a lot of different data from this from the internet. So, yeah. Sam, you're listening. Could you? I'll forget this immediately after I say it, but could you please write down how big is a moose, and then answer that question for us in post-ghost?
Right, because pretty accurately, because I see anything ranging from like, oh, it's the size of a Labrador to it's like baby Godzilla, maybe. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know.
It's so, a pretty wide range. And I feel like a lot of this is misinformation they feed down to the states. I want to know the real answer.
Yeah. I remember reading somewhere they said, if you see a moose on the road, you should speed up because you can just drive between its legs like driving through those sequoias. And I was like
going through the roads. Yeah.
Sound right at all.
Okay. And if you need firewood, you could just saw off one of the legs.
Yeah, exactly.
And they, that's going to set you for months.
And they do grow back is what I heard. So
yes,
they are. Does not hurt. It does not hurt the moose. It's like a starfish.
They're fine, I think. Yeah. I think. Yeah.
So anyway, Sam, just confirm or deny all of that. It's fine.
Anyway, so they hire Charles back, and they make him vice president.
Okay.
So this is actually quite like when I quit Blockbuster because I was like, I don't make enough money here. This is
right.
I love this job. It's the best job, of course, but I make $3 an hour. Right. I don't think it's going to work. And then I went to work at Olive Garden for 2 weeks, and I thought, fuck, I have made a huge mistake because this was a terrible idea.
I remember Henry said, you go back out that door and you crawl in. And you were like, all right, fine, I'll do that.
And I did crawl in. But when I got back in, I said, Henry, listen, let me pitch you an idea. Mm. Could I come back to work here, please? No. And he said, yes, and would you like to be a manager?
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And that's how I got promoted. And I said,
beginning of the end. Yeah.
This is how Blockbuster goes out of business for sure.
It was exciting being in that documentary about, you know, the last days of Blockbuster. That was
right
really
on the vanguard of that. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It was great. So anyway, much like Blockbuster did, things here are going to go gangbusters now that Charles is vice president. So the plan is at Grand Trunk Railroad, they're going to set up the tracks from Winnipeg to Prince Rupert. I don't know where those places are. Mm-hmm. But the Canadian government will then build the rest of the track from Winnipeg to New Brunswick, to Moncton. Oh,
he suckered them into doing it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So it's going great, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, there were some problems right from the start. The Canadian cabinet got real tired of Charles pretty fast. He kept demanding subsidies for the work. Mm-hmm. He is American.
Of course. Yep.
And he's bringing American ideals to this project. So, of course, he's like demanding all these subsidies to pay for the work. They got so mad at him for asking this. It almost tanked the plan. It all worked out okay, but there were a few other problems, three problems in particular. Number one, Charles planned to buy out the Canadian Northern Railway so that he could use some of their line, because you don't have to build a whole line if you can take someone else's line, right? Like you just connect and it's easy.
I've played Ticket to Ride before. I know how it works. Yeah.
Oh, I've never played that. Is it fun?
Oh, it's fun. Yeah. We can't play in our house because Gloria has beaten us so badly every time. That it's not even really fun to play with her anymore. So
this is why I buy her what I hope are good Christmas presents every year, because I do when she eventually ascends to her full form, final form, I want to be on the good side of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Me too. And I'm not currently.
You're not. So. No. But I might put in a good word for you. Anyway, so they want to buy the Canadian Northern, but the Canadian Northern says, absolutely not. And they say, you know what? In fact, fuck you guys. You want to take us? No, we're going to take your fucking lunch. And so then Canadian Northern ramps up their competition. So that was number one. That was a big mistake. That's you're not doing your competitive analysis there, as I would tell my marketing students, because that did not go how you want. Number two, not everyone was on board with Prince Rupert being the western terminal of Canada, because there was, quote, not much traffic there. I don't know anything about Prince Rupert. This is, again, a question that I can't wait for Sam to weigh in on. What I have learned is that Prince Rupert had, A, no people, and B, an extraordinary amount of mud. So okay, people are like, it shouldn't be Prince Rupert. It should like be like, I don't know, Vancouver or something cool. Mm. But Charles was like, no, it's got to be Prince Rupert.
Yeah.
The third problem here is the board of directors for GTR. They don't actually support any of this. They don't want to work with the Canadian government. So they tell Charles, this plan will not work because we will not support them going from Winnipeg to New Brunswick. Mm. And Charles says, I have an idea. Hey, Canada, it's a yes. Don't tell London. We're not going to tell them. So he tells the board of directors, like, okay, we won't do it then. And then he tells Canada, yes, we will. That's going to prove to be a pretty critical mistake.
Yeah. At some point, pretty soon here, telephones get invented and he gets fucked.
Yeah. So let's put a little pin in that one for a second, because that one, that's a big one. Doesn't sound like a big one. It's going to be a big one. So now Charles.
Yeah. You can only sneak into the mailbox and tear up the other guy's mail for so long before they figure out something's going on.
And they are so far away. Like, you have to sail over there to do that. That's a lot of work. So there are some obstacles, is the point. And Charles is under a lot of pressure to get this thing done. It has to get done. It has to be just amazing. It has to be a great transcontinental railroad. And I will say, for Charles, he has a big vision. It goes beyond just the railroad. He also makes plans for a fleet of ocean liners.
Oh, okay.
That will bring things for the train to transport from Asia, from, I don't know, I guess, does Europe come in that way? I don't know. Probably not. They go around. No. Cape Horn is a disaster, so yeah, probably not.
Yeah. Special ocean liners that don't mind the mud is what I'm hearing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big mudders.
Yeah. Big mudders. He wants a bunch of big mudders. He also wants a string of resort hotels along the train tracks.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Which is money.
Who doesn't love taking vacation by the freight line? <It's>
in his defense, in 1902, I don't know if you have any other options really in Canada. Like, you can drive out there, I guess, if you want. It's not going to be very cool.
Do you want to go out west and see the moose harvest? I would love to see the moose harvest this time of year. Yes.
Are you willing to harvest moose? Because that's how we do it. So he went to resort hotels. Oh, across the Rocky Mountains. I should have put that point in there earlier. So there are, that's part of it. All served, of course, by the Grand Trunk Railroad. He even hires a famously expensive architect to design a luxury hotel in Prince Rupert, in this westernmost town of this track. Mm. Even though, again, there are no people there.
Right.
And it's all mud. So he pours everything into getting the main line finished, because he's like, I have to make this transcontinental railway. Everything goes into the main line, which means, among other things, he's not developing any of the feeder lines into that track.
Okay.
So he's ignoring basically like everything north of his thing, right? In Canada, I've learned, is mostly north. So he's not doing it. So the Grand Trunk Railroad's two big competitors, they decide, fuck this guy, let's join forces. If we put our tracks together and spend some money to, kind of make things work out how we want, we can gain control over all the other railway traffic that is not on this one line.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically cutting off that line, because all the other lines that would feed into that line are now these other two lines.
Okay.
Got it?
Yep. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. This leads eventually to Canada ending up with three transcontinental railways instead of one.
A country of 65 people has three transcontinental rail lines.
Just to fuck one transcontinental railway, which is important. I don't know. It's almost like aggressive American business strategies are like short-sighted and not great. I don't know. It's weird. So while this is going on, some other cool American style things that Charles did, here's a list. He refused to pay workers what they were worth.
Sure.
The workers then went on strike, which shut down the operation for a while, which means he was not building his track. then Charles said, you can't go on strike. You're fired. So real Elon up there. So they were like, well, okay, I guess. Good luck building your track. And then Charles said, wait a minute, how am I going to build this track? Mm. So he gives in to their demands and he brings them back. He rehires everyone. And he says, I will rehire everybody that we've just fired. Mm-hmm. Are you happy now? And they were like, I guess. But then he did neglect to hire back 250 of the employees.
Okay.
Now, maybe they couldn't find their email addresses, I guess. he also refused to pay the workers when they were rehired. He refused to pay them their pensions.
Oh, well, I mean,
yeah, go on.
Rail line worker in the middle of rural Canada, you got like a 50-50 shot of reaching pension age. So he's probably like, you know what? Odds are in my favor.
If the moose nobody's doesn't get complain. You, we'll give you 10 bucks.
Yeah.
We'll give you 10 loonies. So anyway, while he's fucking around, the other two railroads are monopolizing the entire western part of the country. Like he's, you know, his people are going on strike. They're being fired. There, nothing is happening here. So while this, like this worker, you know, issue is going on, the other two rail lines are like, we're doing great. And they're monopolizing everything. And so it's not going great for Charles or for the Grand Trunk Railroad. So he's up to his eyeballs in debt. He's not getting the line done. All their non-transcontinental work, it's being stolen away, right? Charles needs a win because the board is not happy with him. he needs a little check in his column. And this is when he gets a call from Sir Wilfrid Laurier, the Prime Minister of Canada.
Oh, the big dog.
And Sir Laurier says, look, he's like, look, no one takes Ottawa seriously. I am so tired of that. Ottawa is so cool. And we've got to make Ottawa a big deal. And I have a really cool plan to get some respect. Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to build a really great hotel.
Okay.
And so Charles says, I love building a cool hotel. Done it before, we'll do again. And then Sir Laurier says, this is great because I can't build it. I am the Prime Minister.
That's they don't let me do that stuff.
Yeah. No, but why don't you build it, make it very good. You can put it next to your train line. And actually, hey, I have a great idea. Actually, oh my God, I'm just thinking about this. What if you build a cool hotel and next door to it, why don't you build a big train station? You can connect them through underground tunnels.
Oh, okay. This is a good idea. Okay. I like this.
It is a good idea.
Yeah.
So the underground tunnel is a very good idea. It's very cold up there. He says, and listen, I'm not done yet. And this is kind of a fun idea. The hotel will need a name. Have you considered Laurier?
Oh. Huh? Oh, huh? Oh.
You okay. could name yeah. it Chateau Laurier. And Charles basically is like, all right. Yeah. And he agrees. And he starts building a big, beautiful hotel that he will name after the Prime Minister of Canada. Hmm. Now, he had, of course, built the hotel in Prince Rupert in Mudtown on the west side. That's one thing. But a hotel in Ottawa is another thing entirely because there are people in Ottawa and there are people who come to Ottawa. So this is going to be a big moneymaker for Charles. And he's pretty excited. And he wants to make it a really special hotel. No expense spared. Like, this is going to be, like, top-notch, right? So here is a photo of the Chateau Laurier.
Oh, very pointy. I like it.
Super pointy. One of the pointiest. That's it. Which it's a great looking hotel.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's right on the water there. Mm-hmm. There's a park over here, which is nice.
There's another pointy hotel in the background and then another one behind. Was that just the architectural style? Pointy?
Well, actually, great question, Patrick. Wow. Gosh, you are. God, what an eye you have. These are the Parliament buildings. And this hotel was built to echo the style of Parliament.
Oh, okay.
Is a little homage to our friend the Prime Minister, Sir Laurier. So yes, they do match, and they are meant to match. What an architectural eye you have.
Indeed. I was appreciating the Doric columns out front. And
Man, just stop.
That's the only one I know.
This hotel is 660,000 square feet.
Ooh.
It's got 429 guest rooms. And as you, I'm sure, are aware, it's designed in the French Gothic Revival Chateauesque style.
Mm-hmm.
To complement
the Parliament. I love the French Gothic. My favorite of the Goths. Or the French Goths.
Okay. Not the first French Gothic building we've done in this show, I think.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, you say it with such confidence, but I know you don't know what you're talking about. So, but you're so believable the way you say it. Mm. It overlooks the Ottawa River, of course, overlooks Park, as I mentioned. There's a reception room with Roman columns.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one aside from Doric. Yes. There's an empire-style ballroom, which means something. The drawing room is decorated with hand-molded gold plaster. It has Tiffany stained glass windows. It has a copper roof.
Wow.
The gables are carved with flowers, scrolls, and crests. And the lobby floors are made of Belgian marble. It's quite a building. How's your toilet?
It's pretty good. I mean, it's... Good. I was thinking moving it from the drawing room. but I don't think I will now.
Yeah, but if you moved it to the great room, then the Belgian marble would sort of make that sound echo. And
yeah,
that's you
really
what
don't
you
want that. Yeah.
Is that what you want? Yeah. So he's putting the finishing touches on the hotel. and so while he's doing this, he has to run over to England real quick to purchase some furniture. Because again, everything has to be exactly right.
Of course. Right.
The only furniture you can think to buy for some of these rooms is from England.
Mm-hmm. So he needs to sail to England,
mm-hmm.
buy 429 of everything, I guess.
Well, yeah. if you're counting bedposts, that times four. Right. So he's got to buy like 1,900 bedposts. Yeah. But the timing is great because he also has to go to London to beg the board of Grand Trunk Railroad to not fire him because they're looking at this and saying, what the fuck are you doing? You are losing so much money everywhere and now also here.
Right.
Please don't do this anymore. Yeah.
He's like, this is all great. This is all great feedback. I do need to go to IKEA, though. I have.
I'm going to bop on over to Norway or wherever they are.
Bit of a list I've got to fill while I'm here.
I need a Glerkensberg times 700.
And the mud boat is idling outside, and we need to fill her up.
So he goes out there. He needs the board to give him more money because he's now doing all this stuff, and then it's not going to be a good news for the board.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, he's also building what will become Union Station attached to this. So he's building also a second, like pretty ornate building next to this one. So the board is very mad, which means all this together means, in April of 1912, he is in London.
Mm-hmm.
He's buying his furniture. He's talking to the board. He's doing his thing. But he has to get back to America pretty quickly because the grand opening gala for the hotel, the Chateau Laurier, that's set for April 25th. So he's got like 2 weeks to get back.
Mm-hmm.
Tick-tock, right? Boom, boom. We gotta get back. So he starts making arrangements to get back to America so he can be at the gala. And it just so happens, luckily for him, He has some business with a man named J. Bruce Ismay.
Mm-hmm.
Ismay is the chairman of a shipping company called the White Star Line.
Oh, no.
And he says, hey, Charles, your timing is actually fucking phenomenal. We have a brand new ship. It's called the Titanic. It is heading to New York, mm-hmm. and if you want, mm-hmm. I can get you a ticket.
And how much furniture do you need to bring with you? Oh, that won't be a problem. We have plenty of room for the furniture, too.
Turns out, actually, that furniture was also on the Titanic.
It probably saved more lives, honestly.
I floated to life on this couch. I don't know where it came from, but I'm so grateful.
After an hour of floating on a particle board dresser in the North Atlantic, things went south. Things went
pretty
south.
Oh, a chaise? Yeah. Oh, I'll swim to that. And then didn't make it. So, of course, Charles is like, well, this is a great idea. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for thinking of me. Like, what an incredible ship you have that will not sink. Mm-hmm. So Charles Melville Hayes does indeed board the Titanic with his wife, one of his daughters, his son-in-law, his secretary, and a maid.
To clean up after him on the Titanic?
Well, I think so. Yeah, of course. Why not? Yeah. Yes, and also he brought her over to London to clean up after him there.
Is important. If I'm going on vacation, I'm not going to clean up after myself. I'm going to bring my maid to sweep up after me.
I know you podcast in an Aldi basement, but some people live differently. So they all get on board the ship. Now they share a deluxe suite. They share suite B69.
Hey.
Nice. Now, if you're familiar with the story of Titanic, you know what's going to happen. If you're not familiar, mm-hmm. I encourage you to go back and listen to episode 58 of This is a Ghost, where we do discuss this in some detail. Now, spoiler alert, this one is a ghost because the Titanic does not make it. Now, when the ship starts sinking, Charles apparently helps the women in his party into one of the lifeboats. But he and his son-in-law and the secretary stay on the Titanic and they drown. Mm-hmm. There's a report, and this may be apocryphal, so it may not be accurate. I don't know, but there's a little something going around that says the night before the crash, Charles was actually lamenting the way that steamship liners were competing to win passengers with faster and faster ships. And supposedly he said, quote, "The time will come soon when this trend will be checked by some appalling disaster." And thus it was. Now, Charles's body actually was recovered by a ship called the Minia. Mm-hmm. Came afterward to this work.
Yep, just scoop shit up. Yeah.
It's like a pool skimmer just going around the North Atlantic. Yep.
I got a wallet. Hey.
His body was recovered. He was brought back to Canada. He was buried at Mount Royal Cemetery in Montreal. And actually, Charles had two funerals, the one in Montreal, but he also had one on the same day in London.
Okay.
So the board of directors is like, you know what? We're doing our funeral for you also. We don't want to really come to Canada.
Yeah. So, I don't know whether it was one of those or whether it was like if you have, you know, two best friends and they're trying to just kind of pull you apart and they're both going to throw a party on the same day. Like, oh, you're going to go to their party? Oh, that's a shame. I'm having my party that day.
Yeah. Someone grab the notebook. Let's see how many people show up at our party. Yeah. So when I die, let's see if you and Ryan, both have a little celebrations of my death. We'll see which one does better.
I guess I also wouldn't be too surprised if, as excited as the board of directors was about Charles in general, if they maybe were just like, you know what, cut off his bottom half. We'll bury it in England. I don't.
We'll take, you know what, we'll take a foot. We don't care. Like this.
I just really want to know for sure.
So he has two funerals. Now, he never saw the Transcontinental Railroad line completed. Work on the GTR was stopped for 5 minutes in his memory, which is probably the maximum amount of time that
literally
that was union breaks. That was 5 minutes. And then they got back to work, but, they eventually completed it, but he wasn't part of it. Mm-hmm. Now, the period in which Hayes led the Grand Trunk Railroad was the most prosperous era in its history. However, his policies also led to the company's entire collapse in 1919 because he made bad decisions.
Oh, well.
At that point, GTR was placed in receivership and the government seized the stock. And it turns out that, very long story short, it was very specifically the fact that he agreed to Canadian terms without getting the okay from the London Board of Directors that led to the company's collapse. Yeah. And here's a pretty fun fact.
Wham!
The railroad car in which his body was transported back to Montreal after it was dredged up from the sea is now preserved at the Canadian Railway Museum. So you can go check that out for some reason. Now, I goes without saying, he did not get to attend the opening gala of the Chateau Laurier. At least not physically. But the velocity, so here's what I think. The velocity of the Titanic, it was going so fast. People don't talk about this, but the Titanic was going so fast. It was going with such speed that when the ship hit the iceberg,
all the ghosts,
his body stopped. But the ghost went.
Right.
Yeah. They go forward. They're thrown forward all the way to Canada. And I think in Charles's case, Ottawa.
I mean, there's not much to haunt in the middle of the Atlantic. So, I mean, you got to go somewhere to haunt something. Yeah, that's
true, but it's not about that. It's really about physics, I think.
Sure, probably.
Yeah, because ghosts, there's not a lot of friction on ghosts. So you just fucking sail.
They're like Teflon on ice. Just woof.
Yeah. All the way to Ottawa. It was amazing. So Charles's ghost made it back to Ottawa, to the hotel, and it still haunts the Chateau Laurier. Today, he is seen walking the halls, especially on the fifth floor. Which is also, by the way, where they put the Hayes Memorial Suite.
Oh.
Which I feels like you're just...
I don't know if I want a suite that's a memorial. You know, I'm thinking I'm just going to defer that. Just decline that one.
Yeah, give me the poorest room you have. Yeah. give me the darkest corner weird room you have. I don't want a rich person's memorial, please.
I'm looking at your Marriott points. You're actually eligible for free upgrade. Oh, really? Yes, to the memorial suite.
Can I save those for
I'll save those for Aruba. Costa I really Rica? Don't want to. Yeah.
Well, and if you don't want your hotel to be haunted, you do not name a room after a dead man. So we just haunt there. Now, I will say the Hayes Suite it actually spans floors 2 through 5.
Oh,
it is.
My goodness.
The room is 2,000 square feet.
Wow.
That is larger than any place I've lived in probably 25 years since I was a child. 2,000 square feet. It's got a dining room, a living room, a bedroom, and an ensuite bath, and some stairs, of course. And it haunts that floor. Now, Hayes' ghost, I will say, is usually pretty chill. Though, from time to time, he does just walk around slamming doors. And sometimes, not very often, but sometimes, he will also break things. For example, glass ashtrays you will smash on the floor and people will be like, man, come on.
Yeah.
That's probably an 80s version of the haunting. Yeah. I don't know if there's.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays he's probably just really upset that you're not following the no smoking laws in the hotel.
Yeah. He walks around with a lighter and and he sets stuff on fire. When he's in a good mood though, he sometimes sings.
Hey.
It's pretty nice. He also sometimes touches people.
Yeah, it's not as nice.
Well, depends on who you are. Are you the ghost? Then in that case, yes.
It kind of depends on which part of the song it is, actually. So
there are, by the way, other less important ghosts at the Chateau Laurier as well, including a child who runs around the seventh floor and then disappears through a wall.
Oh. Ugh.
Yeah. None of it's great. He's not, Charles is not a very angry ghost, which is nice. And that is the story of Charles Melville Hayes, ghost of the Chateau Laurier in Ottawa. Listen, friends, if you enjoy the show, rate, review, please, and tell your friends Consider joining Ghost Plus. It's just like $6 a month. You get bonus episodes of Visits a Ghost. You get a monthly show called Smith Show, which is kind of like this, except no ghosts, but with a different co-host. We give Patrick that day off.
But more trains somehow. I don't really know how you managed to do that, but more
so trains. Many more trains, which is very surprising. you get a discount on merchandise from the shop. We have actually also some new subscriber shows dropping very soon, so you can go get a seven-day free trial at isthisaghost.com/ghostplus. All one word, ghost plus. isthisaghost.com/ghostplus. Go. Is This Ghost is a production of Smith Show Media. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. All the I should note all the notes this week were taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were taken by Patrick Dean. Our latest person to this recording was also Patrick Dean by about an hour.
Oh, easily.
Our social media team is Kai Valonis, Sam Murdoch, and Jennifer Jones. Our new merch is going to be very soon on the site. Actually, by the time you hear this, it might be on the site. But that is being designed by Fox and Quill Studios. Please follow them on Instagram at Fox and Quill Studio. They are doing great work. And thank you all seriously so much for listening. And no matter what happens, I do not make a business deal with the Prime Minister of Canada. If you do, it's a pretty good chance we're going to be telling your story next week on Is This a Ghost?